Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on 101.9 High FM. And my guest today is Professor Jeannie Zeidel-Rudolph, and she's sitting with me in studio, and we've got Craig on control, so it's a lovely, safe environment to be in. Craig, I think Jeannie's earphones are not quite there. Just hang on one moment. Okay. Now, right. I'm going to just tell you a bit about Jeannie, but first of all, I want to ask her. She's just putting back her earphones. Can you hear me now, Jeannie?
I can, indeed.
Okay. I want to ask you, who would you like to dedicate today's program to?
I would like to dedicate it to my mother, Evelyn Zeidel, who invested so much time and love into my life and into my career.
Was she also a musician?
She was an amateur musician in the sense that she played the piano, but she wasn't a professional musician. She was a mom.
She was a mom. How wonderful. Jeannie, it's so good to have you here. And Jeannie's just come back from the Orange Free State University of the Free State, there was a tribute concert and an archive handover. I found that very fascinating, but just let me tell you a bit more about Jeannie first. Jeannie, I'll tell you what it says on this tribute thing. I've also written it out, but at the moment I'm having problems with my internet and couldn't print anything. Right, so Jeannie, this actually says that this afternoon's concert plays tribute to one of the most distinguished figures in South African music, Professor Jeannie Zeidel-Rudolph, composer, educator, visionary, and pioneer. With deep respect and gratitude, we celebrate her exceptional contribution to our country's artistic and academic life. Professor Zeidel-Rudolph holds the historic distinction of being the first woman in South Africa to receive a doctorate in music composition, and that was awarded by the University of Pretoria in 1979. Her artistic path led her from South Africa to the Royal College of Music in London and later to Hamburg, where she studied with the legendary Giorgi Ligeti. Is that the right pronunciation?
Giorgi Ligeti.
Oh, Ligeti, okay. Who had a profound influence and still has in her music. Jeannie's compositional voice is both distinctive and richly textured. And you have a catalogue of over 80 works spanning diverse genres, and her music reflects a rare combination of daring creativity and disciplined craft. And of course, among your numerous accolades is the fact that you composed our wonderful national anthem, Inkosi Sikelel'i, and our dear Madiba. President Nelson Mandela asked you personally if you would be involved. Is that right?
That is true at the beginning, yes. And I was instrumental in the combination of the two national anthems, being that I was one of the only real composers on the committee. I was asked to actually put those two together in the combination, national anthem, which exists today. Yes.
Well, you know, Jeannie, I don't know about you, but when I'm watching a bit of rugby and our team comes on, the Springbok team comes on and they sing the national anthem, and you see all our different colours of our rainbow nation standing there singing together and going from one language to another, it's just wonderful. I find myself crying, quite honestly.
It is emotional, yes.
We'll be back in a moment.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
This is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Professor Jeannie Zeidel-Rudolph. And I was actually talking about Nkosi Sikelel', which Jeannie was a part composer of our anthem. You know, Jeannie, I just as an aside, I don't know, I listen to quite a few quiz shows, and American quiz shows, and English. And funnily enough, one of the questions that is often asked is which country has the most languages in their anthem? And they give you a few countries to choose from, yes. And ours does.
Yes, of course. There are five main language groups in our anthem, which is quite considerable.
Tell me which they are, because I was trying to think about them and I couldn't go onto my internet, so I couldn't. So I'm so pleased you're my internet today.
Well, it covers the Zulu, the Xhosa, the Sotho, the Venda. No, Venda's the only one, actually, which is not in the national anthem. But all the other languages, like the Tswana, the Sotho, the Xhosa, the Zulu, they are all in there, and the related languages as part of the groups. But Venda is not in the national language, a national anthem.
Were you asked why, by any chance?
No, I just remember that was just how it sort of came out.
And then, of course, the English and the Afrikaans came
in. Yes, which was never there before, in terms of there was never English in the national anthem.
Oh, wasn't there?
No.
So
no,
you brought that in.
Well, previous to the new dispensation, in De Stem, there was only Afrikaans. So, yes, I actually wrote the words in English for the anthem.
Wow, well done. And in actual fact, when I came in now to the office, everyone wants a photograph of Jeannie afterwards. Jeannie, we're going to move on a bit because people can Google you and look on Safari or Google,
yes,
and get a lot of information on you. But what I would like to go to at the moment is, why did you decide to give your 80 manuscripts and music and compositions to the Orange Free State, University of the Orange Free State?
The music department in the University of Bloemfontein is a particularly active and valued department. They have the facilities, they have the will to want to preserve the best of South African culture, and they expressed their desire and their willingness to help with the packing up and to house the whole collection. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that of all the universities in South Africa, they are the ones that will be most prominent in terms of advertising the fact that this material is available to students, to researchers, to staff, to music lovers, to whoever would want to actually make it available for anybody who would be interested.
I see they're going to digitize all of it as well.
Absolutely, which is terribly important.
Very important. And there's a very good article by story by Tsepo Tetsu, Tsotetsi. And it's a very good story about this honor that Jeannie actually did for Bloemfontein University. And it actually says that... let me just look here. It's a combined celebration and preservation of your complete archive of over 80 compositions across various genres.
Yes.
Absolutely amazing.
The head of music there is Professor Jan Birkus, and Professor Vasu Reddy are also people who have expressed such a lot of interest in preserving and documenting and making available a collection of this nature.
Isn't that wonderful? And you were there last week, and you actually also, they played one of your newest compositions.
Yes, it was a commissioned work for string quartet, and their resident string quartet did a most magnificent job of learning the music, rehearsing it while I was there, and then performing it at the lunch hour concert.
And they were very excited to actually perform it in front of you, weren't they?
Absolutely. It was an honor for all of us.
I'm sure. Now, Jeannie, you are writing a memoir at the moment. And this, your memoir, you sent me a few, the prelude, and I ended up in tears. Now, tell me how this came about.
Well, after a lifetime of music, I decided I should really document all of this because it's, I won't say how many, but definitely over 70 years of music events, music activities, and unbelievable music experiences. So I felt that not only for my children and grandchildren, but for posterity, that I should document these incredibly interesting sort of events, whether they were at music festivals or commissioned works or performances or new compositions or playing in various groups. I felt that this had to be documented. So I wrote my book called Sound Me Out, A Lifetime of Music and Memories, with chapters which cover my early years, my teachers, a chapter on gender agenda, which discusses how I felt to be a woman composer in what was very much a man's world at the time. And it covers all my years at WITS, which were many, many years at WITS, exceptionally wonderful years at the university. I adored my teaching. I absolutely loved teaching students, and that was a big part of my life.
You know, you I actually can see how you must have loved your students and how they loved you, because coming up the stairs today to our studio, we passed Mike McKenna, who is one of our Chai FM staff members, and you actually said to him that he's got a beautiful voice. What was it in a voice that you do pick up?
It's the quality, it's the resonance, and I can hear it even in a speaking voice. It's those beautiful overtones and the richness of the quality of the voice.
Isn't that amazing? So when you go outside, does music speak to you from the universe, from nature? How does it speak to you?
I'm accompanied by music every moment of every waking day. Mm. It's in my head. I feel it in my fingers because my fingers were trained to feel around chords, around melodies, around harmonies. So it's in my head. Isn't 24/7.
Gosh. How do you close? Do you ever get to close it off?
Not really. I mean, you know, when I sleep, I even sometimes dream music.
Gosh. Do you wake up and write down what you're dreaming
sometimes?
I have
done. I have done in the past, absolutely. And in fact, those waking moments are the time when I often feel most inspired to compose something. Mm.
And being a mother, and were you able to wake up and do that? Or did you have to wake up and get people to school, your daughters? We're going to get back to that.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with Professor Jeannie Zeidel-Rudolph. If you'd like to ask Jeannie any questions or send any messages, please WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. Now, Jeannie, I was asking, when you said that you wake up and, you know, you often compose, I see in your memoir, I'm going to get back to what I've just asked you, but you said, I have lived my life so far not with music, but in music. How beautiful. So when you woke up in the morning and you had this music in your head that needed to be put down, and yet you still had to get your daughters off to school. Tell me how you worked that.
Well, I have been incredibly blessed to have a husband like Michael, who has been so much more than just a husband and a father. He has pitched in, has always been there to help practically with lifts, with on all levels. So that, I suppose, is a little unusual, but I've always had his incredible support and assistance. So, yes, even though I had to do the hairdo of the child that morning or make sure that they brushed their teeth, which in fact was Michael's area as a dentist, I also had the freedom to go and do what I had to do. So it was a balancing act. You know, he has his very important work, and we just, at times, he took precedence, and at times I took precedence.
So it was a balancing act.
Absolutely.
And your children, I mean, your daughter Tamara is very close to me and my family. We adore her.
Yes.
And I know how proud she is of you. So you have, how many daughters do you have?
We have five daughters. Mm-hmm. Michael had a daughter, Jackie, before we got married. So we have five girls, and daughters are absolutely superb. They're very close to home. They're very supportive of their mother. and we absolutely adore them.
I'm sure. And they're incredibly proud of you. Now, tell me about how it came about that you were, had you always decided that you were going to read write a memoir?
Not really, but I think I got to the point once I had left the university and I'd left academia, and I had a break in my commissioning contracts, and I wasn't particularly involved in writing a piece of music. I thought that it was very important to document for future generations, certainly for my children, to document and preserve a record of my many, many incredibly wonderful experiences through life.
And accolades.
Well, thank God for that, too.
Mm-hmm. So who you? I know that you told me that the publisher is a Giants.
JIAS is the Johannesburg Institute for Advanced Studies. They are located at the University of Johannesburg.
Right.
And they are involved in a project called African Biographies. And they are the ones that with whom I've been in touch, and I'm sincerely hoping that once everything is tied up, and all the photographs have been submitted for the various chapters, which I have completed writing, that they will then consider doing this publication as part of their African biographies.
And you mentioned to me that Barbara Masekela was one of the first in the series of African biographies.
Yes, she wrote a biography called Polly Polly, which is also very significant, and documents her life and her brother's life as well, Hugh Masekela.
Oh, okay. So for anyone interested in that, please Google that as well. Now, Jeannie, I wanted to start where your prelude started, and you said, I would like you to read it.
Okay, so this is the beginning of my autobiography.
The beginning.
And it starts like this. The sky was getting darker, although it was only 4 o'clock in the afternoon. A typical Highveld storm was approaching, and at the age of 5, I was petrified to be alone. My mother and father worked a full day at his men's outfitting shop. My elderly grandmother was asleep at the back of the house, and my brother had gone to a friend. The rain started pelting down, and the hail became so loud that I blocked my ears and began shaking and crying. The lightning was flashing, and the thunder made our flimsy little house shake. Through my tears, I saw our piano in the corner of the lounge, and I ran to open the lid. I had just learnt to play a little piece called Prelude by Henry Purcell, and I jumped up onto the piano chair. By now it was so dark in the house that I could hardly see the notes. My legs dangled way above the pedals, and my fingers found the chipped ivory keys. I had memorized the little melody and repeated it over and over again very loudly to drown out the terrifying cacophony of the storm. Escaping into the world of sound and music became my go-to refuge and solace, the language through which to negotiate fear, hope, love, and survival, a portent of my future passion and career.
Isn't that beautiful? And you know, you said that you were determined that your memoir was not going to be academic, a treatise on music, especially not a technical or analytical one. And by that first chapter, you can definitely see that this is going to be a memoir of great, great meaning. I wanted
it to be a human story. Mm. Yes, there have been many articles and journal articles devoted to analyses of my actual music, which is more academic. So I wanted this to be a human story.
And if it touched my heart, I'm quite sure it's going to touch many hearts. Now, you also said that you do feel that you'll differentiate between male and female composers, and that sometimes it actually worked in your favor. Tell me how it worked in your favor.
I guess it is a historical fact that women composers were not accepted for a long while. Even Sir Thomas Beecham was heard to say, there are no women composers, never have been, and probably never will be. Hmm. So that was a fact in the world of music. But I discovered soon enough that if I was pleasant and proved that I had something to offer in the way of quality of music, even at festivals or conferences, that people did take me more seriously. As a very young girl of 21 or 20, I wasn't taken so seriously because I was regarded as, oh, well, this is just a sort of a fad or not a serious profession. But people did, when they realized that I was absolutely committed to being a musician and a composer, they did start taking me seriously.
And did you influence many other women?
I hope so, because I did go to several festivals of women-only composers' festivals.
In South Africa?
No, overseas, certainly in America, several festivals in America devoted entirely to women composers. There was one in Israel, dedicated to women composers entirely.
Oh.
And that was actually in the Negev, a wonderful one, many, many years ago. And there were only women composers there, and the quality of composition was a very high standard.
That must have been very exciting for you. Now, the other thing that you say is that as much as I have vivid memories of a musical home, I mostly cherish my memories of a loving, nurturing one, a rarity in the digital world in which we now live. Why do you say that?
Well, I think, unfortunately, with the advent of cell phones, computers, tablets, everything electronic, people tend to get distracted, to be on their phones, be on their computers, and not enough time to actually communicate via human one-on-one communication.
Interactions. I have to agree with you. And yet you say, and I agree with you here as well, that you have great gratitude to God, to Hashem, for living in the last century, in some of the last century, plus this one, where we do have all these different things at our fingertips, yes, you know, that we can look into.
Indeed. The fact that I can actually compose on my computer and print a piece of music from my computer and do copies. I shudder to think how poor old Mozart could have managed at the age of 5 or 6 writing out his manuscripts, or even a little older, and then having to write out all the parts of the symphonic score. Now we do it all on computer.
It's absolutely amazing. And did you have to learn that skill?
I did have to. There is software. I don't think I'm that sort of at the top of my game electronically, but it's enough for me to be able to produce scores.
Well, that's amazing, I must admit. I have been offline at the moment. I was shocked to see how much I have come to rely on our digital age and our different telecommunication systems.
Absolutely.
Now, you also said that the level of artificial intelligence currently is indeed daunting. Why do you feel that?
Well, I think it is almost possible to feed information into the computer and tell it to compose a piece of music. And indeed, people do all the time. I think it's daunting because it can eliminate the human spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you can compose music through the computer and get a perfectly adequate piece of piano music or orchestral music, but it doesn't have the heart and soul of the human being.
I have to agree, and I must admit that even in Chai FM, we've now got the AI, Mr. George, who's reading our news, and every day I am still fighting against it, to tell you the truth. I much preferred Mike McKenna's voice on air.
I totally agree with you, completely.
Now, what about, you said that in many ways you had to be quite obsessive about your career, your work, getting it down. Was there a cost to that, or with relationships, with friendships?
I think there is always a cost. I think one has to be deliberate about not being distracted. There are so many distractions. I mean, I love friends and I love people. I'm very sociable, but I had to withdraw if I had a piece of music with a deadline to complete. I had to withdraw, and my husband and family were incredibly understanding and fielded for me. and I had to just get down and complete a piece of music, a commissioned work. And yes, there was a cost, perhaps in the number of friendships, perhaps in my social engagements. There were times I didn't go out, couldn't go out. And perhaps even having worked so very, very hard at one stage, I got myself into an illness for a year, and that was a bit difficult, but thank God I survived that. And yes, God has been good to me, absolutely.
So in looking back, would you have wanted more of a balance, or do you feel that you did have a balance?
I don't think there's ever really a real balance. I wouldn't have changed anything, though. Mm. I would not have produced what I've managed to produce had I sought for a balance. And honestly, I don't feel that the social engagements would have satisfied me to the extent that composing music has done.
Oh, isn't that beautiful? I wanted to also ask you, we discussed other music and people that you'd been involved with, and the one was Helen Haldemuth. Now, Helen is so well known in our community, in the Jewish community, in Johannesburg and in South Africa. So tell me a bit about that.
Yes, Helen and I collaborated several times, but what comes to mind mostly is we collaborated on a piece of music called He Walked to Freedom, which was a tribute to President Mandela. And in fact, it was done. It was sung in 1997 at his doctoral ceremony down in Cape Town. And Helen wrote the most beautiful words for He Walked to Freedom. And I added a little bit here and there in the verses. And then I produced the music. And it was sung in front of President Mandela in Cape Town at the Baxter Theatre. Oh. And he was so delighted. He came across the stage and he hugged us both. And it was a wonderful, wonderful occasion.
Oh, gosh, I'm sure. Wow, I would have loved to have been there. Jeannie, go on with a bit more of your different chapters. Which chapter would you most likely like to discuss?
Well, I was remarkably privileged to have wonderful, wonderful teachers of composition. In Hamburg, Germany, I had Georges Ligeti, who was probably known for his 2001 Space Odyssey music.
Oh, yes.
And he taught me composition. And I had a most remarkable piano teacher called John Lill at the Royal College of Music. And I had a wonderful supervisor at Pretoria University, Professor Grevier. Professor Grevier was a wonderful musician and composer. So I've been very blessed to have wonderful teachers. But I'm looking at the chapters, and I speak about the anthem, and I speak about my African music because I was very influenced by indigenous African music in my works, as well as being influenced by Jewish music in my works. So it's a real kind of cross-cultural, intercultural composition that comes out of me from all of these wonderful influences.
So when you're in another country, for instance, when you were in Germany, did that music influence you to write more for that culture?
I think I was influenced as a young person by what was going on in the European avant-garde. And so when I was young, there was this kind of post-war European avant-garde with people like Stockhausen and Ligeti and others like that, Xenakis. And I was influenced in the early years, but my music has become much more accessible, much more tuneful, much more melodious, and far less cerebral and academic.
That's interesting. Because I see you've also got here one of your chapters is Pieces for the Young.
Yes.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, after a visit to the game reserve, I wrote some music which will appeal to young people. I also wrote for my daughters. So at the time, I wrote a piece for Sarah called Mixed Feelings. I wrote a piece for Tamar, a piece for Natalie, a piece for Nisi. And all of these pieces form part of my pieces for the young because my inspiration, of course, were my wonderful daughters. Mm-hmm. And although they don't all play, two of them did play and enjoyed their piano playing very much.
So they didn't follow you as a career into it?
No. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm not unhappy about that because it is a very demanding career. And if one wants family and profession, it's a very demanding career to be a musician.
I'm sure. Just tell me a bit about the awards and the prizes. And I see the one chapter is awards, prizes, and surprises. Where do you want to start, with the surprises or the awards?
I was very fortunate to be awarded by, at the time, President Mbeki in about around 2004, the Order of Ikhamanga.
Tell me what that is. I did read it, but I'd love our listeners to know what it is.
It was one of the orders that is given out by the then president, and it's either gold, silver, or bronze, and it's awarded to people in the arts or people in politics or people in sport.
Every year.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, I remember Penny, the swimmer, was the same year that I was awarded my Order of Ikhamanga. What was her name? Penny. Anyway, the wonderful swimmer without the leg.
Oh, yes.
She was awarded a prize that particular year. And it was pomp and ceremony and beautiful, wonderful dinner and just a wonderful social and professional event.
We're going to get back to that. Thank you, Craig.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with Professor Jeannie Zeidel-Rudolph. If you'd like to WhatsApp us, please do so on 061-895-1019. I think I need to also just say here that High FM is a free app. If you want to download that, and you'll find all the podcasts on there and all the many programs as well. Now, Jeannie, you know, you won an award in Rome in 2018. Will you tell me a bit about that?
Yes, I entered a work called the Oratoria for Human Rights in 2018 for a competition in Rome. There were 400 entries. And it was for the Donna in Musica United Nations special anniversary, 70th anniversary. And I was so fortunate that my work was chosen as a winner amongst the 400 works. What was so incredibly beautiful was when Michael and I arrived in Rome to go to the rehearsal and performance, we were in the foyer, and we heard the music being rehearsed, and I walked into this glorious Teatro Argentina, which was magnificently beautiful, just like those opera theatres with all the golden tiers. Mm. And we heard the music being rehearsed, and I went up there, and on stage was the orchestra, and it was the most, exciting opportunity for me to have an orchestral work done by a beautiful orchestra as a prize-winning event in Rome in 1918. It was beautiful.
And to have walked in just then also, wow,
yes.
Must have been incredibly moving.
It absolutely was, because the theatre was empty, you know, those beautiful velvet, red velvet seats and all the tiers, and hearing the rehearsal with the conductor and the tenor, the baritone solo, the soprano voice, and this chorus of magnificent voices plus orchestra were rehearsing my music at that very moment.
It's absolutely amazing. And did you go up and introduce yourself?
I certainly did.
Good.
And it was glorious, absolutely glorious. One of the highlights of my professional life was to hear that. And in fact, one can actually Google that. It's on YouTube as Oratoria for Human Rights with my name, Jeannie Zeidel-Rudolph. And I was extremely fortunate that somebody in the audience had the presence of mind to do an amateur recording. Otherwise, I would not have had a recording.
Oh, how fantastic. So we can pick that up on YouTube.
Indeed.
Okay, great. I've just written that down. You know, I must admit that I'm not easily moved to tears, Jeannie, but certain events of your book that you sent me did reduce me to tears. And I think your love of family, music, and humanity are so woven into your memoirs that I laughed, I must admit. I also pondered over certain things. And then I reread as well. And I just felt that your love of music, of life, of humanity shone through. How do you feel about humanity at the moment? You know, it's a hard question, but as Lord Jonathan Sacks spoke about, Lord Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, our fractured world at the moment, our fractured life. How do you overcome that feeling of despair about our world at the moment?
The way I do it is I try to retain an attitude of gratitude. And although it sounds like a platitude,
is that your pun?
That is my pun for today. I think that's the only way we can retain hope, because the human spirit has to be retained in hope. And yes, there are disasters and human failures and terrible things that are happening in the world, but on the whole, one has to retain hope in the human spirit.
Well, that's very much what I think as well. And funny enough, Hans Christian Andersen said, when words fail, music speaks.
Indeed.
And I have mentioned before that my husband, I think he must drive all our neighbors insane. He's always got his music on full blast, and it's pretty eclectic, his music. I'm hoping our neighbors all enjoy it as well, because he dances around the garden doing gardening, listening to music. And it's his way of connecting to the world and to the earth, to what's around him in a positive way. And as you say, also with gratitude and hope. I think music very definitely gives us hope. Now, the one I did see, your coda. Now, tell me about coda, because it's your coda in your memoir is right at the back. Tell me what coda is.
A coda really is a piece of music tagged on at the end, very often like on a sonata or a piece of symphony. It's not really an afterthought. It's more like a summing up, a conclusion of all the material that has gone before. And that's what I was hoping to do in the coda, or the conclusion of my book, to bring together the threads of what has been a very blessed life, and looking to the future and thanking those, not only God, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, my husband, my children, my family, my mother, my father, thanking everybody for the privilege of having been able to live a life of music and loving family, which I think is the most incredible blessing.
It is a blessing. And you mention quite often laughter. What has laughter meant in your life?
Well, I get, if I become too serious or sad, which I do, my daughters pull me right out of that with the funniest, the most wonderful, the most hilarious stories, puns and anecdotes. And you talk about Tamar. She, I think, is the one that does this the most. You do know her. You're a friend of hers. And we have the most wonderful relationships where immediately life lightens up through my daughters and through laughter. And we love to laugh together.
And, you know, I'm smiling at you because just the other day, Tamar walked in the gate, walking home from shul, and she'd obviously heard the laughter coming from our house. And my son said, "Dad, there's something the matter with the gate lock. And Leon said, what, there's nothing wrong with it. He said, "There is, you know, it's just allowing people just to walk in. It's not closing." And we had such a good laugh at that. And I must admit, Tamar does bring a lot of laughter in. You're quite right. We as a family also rely a lot on laughter.
Yes, but I have to mention Natalie and Sarah and Nisi and Jackie. And they too have got their own very specialized forms of sense of humor, all very different. And they really do make me laugh too.
Well, I must admit, being a mother of so many girls, I'm a mother of two girls, and that has not always been easy. You know, one of the final things that you said in your coda was that you said you have, all I know is that there has been a force which refused to be silenced. We're going to get back to that.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Professor Jeannie Zeidel-Rudolph, and our time is going very quickly. But I wanted to ask you one thing, Jeannie, which I had mentioned, but I just want to read this part of your memoir. I believe remarkably generous of God to have shown me such kindness throughout my life's adventures. I obviously started in the middle there. That generosity has remained somewhat enigmatic. For all the private and professional annotations I've made of my career and my journey through music, a large part of me has not understood why I was born with a compulsion, or rather a propulsion, to compose, perform, teach, and immerse myself in music, often at the cost of precious time with those most dear to me. All I know is that it has been a force which refused to be silenced or subverted, and one which has felt on so many levels sacramental. The way I could best serve my Creator who implanted it in me. Tell me about that force. How did it feel hearing it read back to you like that?
It's difficult to define. My gratitude is that I have this need to compose, and I'm able to. You know, one might have the need to do something, and then it's sort of a sticking point. But I've been given the technical, the musical, and the background to be able to know how to do it. And it is a driving force. It's difficult to describe. It's difficult to define. But it is a directive, almost, from God. And it's something that if you are given talent and you don't use it, I would feel very guilty about that, and that's not the way to go. So if one has been given talent and the ability, one really has a duty to act on it and to produce and to give back to humanity what has been given to you.
So true. It's sometimes a very hard taskmaster. You know, life can be a hard taskmaster. But, you know, there is that Adam, where are you? Hashem's call to man. And without doubt, you have definitely answered that call amazingly. Is there anything that you still wish that you want to still do?
I just want to be able to, healthy enough, able to still write. I'm not going to talk about my magnum opus, because I'm very happy that I wrote a piano concerto, which in a way I do regard as my magnum opus. I would dearly love to write more concertos, perhaps for violin or other more piano pieces, because that really is my home ground. Being a pianist from the age of 5, I would love to write more piano pieces, perhaps for competitions. So in time, that may happen. But I'm just so grateful for just having my family, and that we should just, please God, be able to be together for many years from now.
Absolutely. How beautiful. You do say that I have long reconciled myself to not always understanding, but simply trusting the process and obeying the force. And it is in that spirit that I've written and now end this narrative. What I do know is that for as long as I have lived, I have done so in the textures, timbres, rhythms, contours, and cadences of music. And after I have departed this world, my mark on it will continue to be found there and in my remarkable and cherished descendants. That little 5-year-old girl who sought refuge in music during the storm is alive and well and grateful beyond measure to have shared my story with you. Jeannie, wow, what a wonderful legacy. And it lives on still, and it will live on for many, many years, please God. Thank you for being with me today. How would you like to end?
Thank you for inviting me. I think you do the most remarkable work. It's such a pleasure to be able to communicate these thoughts to the community. And I thank you, Sue. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jeannie. Thank you, Craig. And thank you, Peterson, for keeping us on air.